This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
Daylight breaks over the ridge. The hounds strike. No crowds, no cameras, just a track and the hounds that bring the story to life. That's what this show's about. Dogs, dirt roads, early mornings, and the people who live it. This is Creekside Chronicles. Hounds, hunting, and heritage. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, houndsman, hunter, and lifelong student of the outdoors. Here, we chase more than game. We chase knowledge about hounds, hunting, and living the outdoor life the right way. From bear country to back roads, this is where the hunt meets heart, and every story runs a different trail. So pull up your chair by the creek, leash up your best hound, and let's get after it together. Performance starts in the feed. Inukshuk's high fat content fuels long runs and hard hunts, giving dogs the steady energy they need, while quality protein supports faster recovery after the work is done. That's why I trust Inukshuk dog food. Packed with energy and nutrition, dogs need to go further, run harder, and recover stronger. If you want extreme performance, you can look them up at Inukshuk Professional Dog Food or CoreyNutrition.com.
Welcome back on this wonderful Wednesday to the Creekside. We talk about everything from the water to the woods. We talk about it all. If you've been listening along, you're a part of the Creekside crew, so you know what to do. Pull up that chair. I'll throw another log on the fire, and we'll get this episode started.
Before we get started on today's topic, let's get you caught up on what's been going on here. Turkey season is over, finished, done. Turkeys won this year. Several days that I hunted, I didn't even hear a turkey. And then I'd drive back home and it'd be a hen standing on the side of the road. Or I'd drive up one of the roads at between here and town, and there'd be a strutter and two hens out in the field midday or mid afternoon. So, yep, mark this year up for the turkeys. But according to the DWR, the forecast this year said that last year's hatch was going to be low. So, looking at what they predicted, this year kind of fell right into that. So, yeah, wasn't good. Fishing, oh boy, been hitting the river. Got back in. The muskies are post-spawn, so been trying to get after them a little bit. It seems like everybody and their brother's catching them but me, and I just don't understand it. While I've been muskie fishing, I have not raised a muskie. And just so everybody's on the same page, raising a muskie means you had one come in, follow in, brought one up where you could see it, but it didn't commit. So while I'm muskie fishing, I have not. But now while I'm bass fishing, we have several, which is kind of crazy. But that's what happens. Bass fishing has picked up a little bit. It's still a weird year. With the amount of numbers that we were catching last year to this year, makes you want to scratch your head. And it really feels like that we have lost a lot of fish. Because last year, I mean, very seldom did you go out and not catch 20, 30, 40 fish. And in fact, Memorial Day weekend last year, just in one day, we put over 100 fish in the boat. Of course, we fished all day, but yeah, it's extremely weird. Not sure what's going on. But I went out Friday night and caught several nice fish. Started catching some smaller fish, so that's a good sign. Hadn't been catching a lot of smaller fish. I was actually musky fishing earlier in the evening, and I was using a 7-inch slammer, which is a pretty much just a, I don't know what you call it. It's just a stick bait. And you can use it as a jerk bait, or you can use it as a slow roll. You can use it in several different types. It's one of my favorite baits to use. Had this big old bass come up and whop it. Now, this is a 7-inch bait. Bass got a hold of it. Reeled it in when I was bringing it in the boat. Bass flopped off, but it was a good fish. I mean, it was a 19 or a 20. It was right in that area. So, weekend before last, fishing a tournament, and hallelujah, finally got back in the money. I didn't win it, but I got second. Ended up with big fish, so that pays out too. So, we got second place money and got first place for big fish. So it was a good day. It almost paid for my gas in the boat, in the truck. As high as gas prices are, but that's what's been going on. Other than that, letting the dogs out while I'm mowing. I've been concentrating on that. I've been trying to get all the dogs out. I do it two at a time. Get them some exercise, let them run around. And it's kind of crazy to watch. You know, I let them out for like 30 minutes at a time. And I mean, by the end of that 30 minutes, the dogs are laying in the shade, or they've run around enough where they're laying somewhere, tongues hanging out, dragging. That really shows you how bad a shape the dogs are in. So I have got to step up my game on that. Today, we're going to get into something that I think a lot of folks see, but don't always understand it. And this is actually something that I am seeing with a young dog that I'm working right now. And I actually noticed this back in February, March. And I wrote a note down. And here it is, May, and we talking about it. So that's how things get behind. But that's the difference between a hound that is visually stimulated and one that really uses his nose to figure things out. And more importantly, we are going to talk about that. I don't want to say pup because he's not. He's a little over a year. You know, back then he was not. He was under a year. So just use that language lightly. He's going to be one that doesn't bark at live game. Don't shy away from it. But will absolutely put his head down and trail what that animal leaves behind. What is that dog? Think he's behind? Think he's lacking? Or is it something you might not want to mess up moving forward? So, two types of hounds. We'll break it down. We'll just make it very simple. Most hounds fall into two categories. We usually notice the ones that lean in a way that we think they're learning early. And most of the time, that's going to be your visually stimulated hound. What do you mean? What's visually stimulated? Keys off movement, gets excited when they see the game that they're after. They'll open quick, very intense. And sometimes you see it that they are very, very chaotic. All right, let's give me a visual of this, Heath. Looks like. Well, this is what it looks like. See a deer, see a bear, see a coon, a coyote. Immediate reaction. That's what we're looking for, right? Barking, chasing. That's a good sign, we think. The dogs are more triggered than they are actually thinking or processing. You know, those dogs make us feel good really early because they are showing us something quick, immediate reaction. And this method is used a lot here in the East. And I'll go over a conversation that Buddy and I had last week, which brought this topic back up. So everybody knows that in Virginia, we get to hunt August, September, training season, and then December. So we get 3 months a year. So if you break it down 90 days and we can't hunt on Sundays in December. So that takes away a few days. And then you look at weather. We went through this whole gamut before. You look at weather, look at family obligations and work and everything else. You know, out of those 90 days, if you're hunting 45 of them, which is half, or 60 of them, like you're doing really good. So, like I used to do, I used to get like my young dogs to get, I used to get them started in the after season, in the early spring, March, April, start coon hunting them till they get them running and training their own game. And then in August rolls around, I switch them over to the bear world. That was kind of my standard pattern. And what we would do, and I know a lot of people still use this, what we would do is, you know, you can live trap a coon as long as season's in. So back in March, well, I'll hold off on that part. You live trap a coon. You take it out and you sit in your yard or sit it somewhere and you let your puppies loose or your young dog loose or whichever dog you're working on. You let that dog loose and it goes out and it sees the trap, and most time it'll start running around circles and booger barking. And then as his confidence builds up, you know, he'll get after it. And then take the dog and tie the dog back and take the trap and turn the coon loose, and they see it run off, right? And it runs over the hill, and you turn the dog loose, and the dog's screaming down through there. Ah, rah, 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 rah. There he goes. And a lot of times those younger dogs will overrun those tracks and so on and so forth. But that's just one way of getting the dog started. So Buddy and I's conversation was about that. And Buddy's like, you know, Heath, we don't do that. Like, you know, I cat hunt. I take my young dogs with the old dogs as we're hunting. I really don't get them started on live game like that. And it kind of dawned on me that I bet you a lot of guys out west really don't. A lot of guys out west don't do the same things as we do here in the east, because just the sheer numbers of coons, I'm sure. I mean, I know that several of my friends in Wyoming say that they're super hard to find there. So just food for thought, just thinking about it out loud and having conversations about the different styles and so on and so forth. So I'll tell you what I do that changes that up a little bit on the visual side of it before we get into the meat and potatoes of this thing. I never just set the coon out in the open. I just never do that. I used to, but as I've learned that the nose is the more important thing, I will cover it up with brush, or I'll put it somewhere that's not visual. A lot of times I've got a big maple tree out here in the yard, and I can stick the coon up in the first fork of that maple tree, which is about 5 foot in the air. And I'll turn my young dogs or my puppies or whatever loose, and I'll let them just kind of go, just let them do their thing. And you'll see the dogs get into that odor. They'll work the scent. They'll find it, and they'll do the same thing then. They'll start circling. Some of them may booger bark. Some of them are going to, you know, stretch up on the tree and do the things that the puppies do, and so on and so forth. And then what I do is, after I introduce that odor, okay, that's my introduction, I'll go back to the back side of the place here. No dogs. They're either in the truck or back in the pen, and I turn the coon loose and let him go. And then I'll come back, depending on, you know, the weather, the temperature, the time of day, blah, 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 all that stuff that we know. I'll go back and I'll take the pups and just walk them through the area that I turn the coon loose in. So that's just kind of how I've tweaked it for me. Now, I've got a young dog that he did everything I want him to do, but he didn't. All right. So he runs through the scenario. He finds the odor. He follows the odor through the air, head up to the tree. He circles the tree, stretches out on the tree. He's very curious. He doesn't immediately go to bark. And in fact, he doesn't bark at all. But he goes downwind. He works the odor, the scent, downwind to where he's almost standing up on his back legs, just like smelling. He's taking that in. So that's fine with me. But I've got two other pups that's engaged in this activity who immediately go to treeing. Like, immediately. So I take it, I turn it loose, I go get the three pups, and I'm walking down the wood line, down into the holler, and the other pups smell, and they run around, and they're looking, and they're smelling, and they're smelling. This pup hits the track, nose drops, tail starts wagging, into the woods he goes. I have no clue where it went. I mean, I don't. And he starts opening. And guess who follows along? The other two pups. So, with the initial observation of that, the part in the yard, I don't think people would be discouraged, but I think seeing the other two pups would be an early process of elimination. Like, not going to cut it. Not my style here. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about the nose-driven hound, because this is the category that he fits in. Processes the scent first, which is exactly what I just described to you. He's slower to react visually, process I just described to you. And he thinks through things. He was very cautious. He was taking it in. So he might watch, not say a word, you know, but once that track's there, boom, went right to work. More methodical. He was quieter. And I will promise you this, he's going to be more accurate. There are dogs that don't impress you in the yard, but will humble you in the woods later on. And I see that in this dog. I'll take another analogy with the visual stimulation. So in the police world, in the canine world, we use a lot of visual stimulation to get through processes because just like right now, I've got four dogs that needs to start a canine, basic canine school. The sheriffs and the chiefs are like, hey, I need this done. I need this done. I need to get it done. Well, for me, just in detection alone, it's 120-hour school. I will not certify the dog until they've completed 120-hour school successfully, which means they have odor recognition, search patterns down, the handler is able to read the body language and the behavior and explain to me what's going on and when he is in odor and when he is not just being curious. So we use a lot. No, let me rephrase that. I do not like to use it. I would rather take my time and let things happen more naturally. But because of the business alone, sometimes you have to start that. And we use a lot of visual stimulation. So I understand the pros and cons of it. And some of the cons I really do not like. I don't want the dog to cheat. I don't want the dog to rush through things. I want the dog to tell me what he's smelling, not what he's seeing. I've got eyes. I can figure that part of it out. And I'm using the dog because the 220 million scent receptors that allows him to scent discriminate and find out what I want him to find, right? So building searches. Let's talk about building searches. When I start a building search, I'll have somebody go in to the first door, stand behind the door, crack the door just enough, and the dog comes, he gets into odor, boom, and he gets a reward. Calm, cool, collective. And I know that's just I'm kind of really going through that process, but there's a whole lot more to it than that. But I'm telling you, I want the dog calm and quiet, right? I don't want that dog leaking all over the place, which I don't care if he's whining, whimpering, barking, leaking with body language. I want that dog calm and collected. And I really, 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 really like my hounds to be the same way. That chaotic mess is just not conducive for me. So let's go back around now. Let's talk about what brought us here. So you turn something loose in front of the animal. The dog don't want to bark. But it doesn't tuck his tail. He doesn't cower away. And later on, it picks up that track and starts to work. So what's actually happening? The pup is processing scent, not emotion. Not intimidated, good sign. Not overly excited, also a really good sign. Choosing scent over sight is a great sign. That dog isn't confused. He's just wired a little differently. And I think people make mistakes when they don't see the visual version that we're all so accustomed to. And we can see it. And we see, you know, all that stimulation and it's put into motion. Like we just discussed, the barking, the chasing, all the other things. But here's some mistakes. They think, all right, that pup doesn't have it because he's not doing X, Y, and Z. So what do? They overexpose you with sight chases. Mm-hmm. We do that. We talk about that. They try to force excitement. You know, we're in there, we're, you know, come on, get him, you know, patting on the tree and, you know, patting the dog and, you know, rattling its things like we're forcing excitement. And that's not what we need to be doing. And we put in the louder, faster dogs, the two that I had with me, right? And then what happens? You can actually ruin what could have been or would have been a top-end tracking dog. A visual dog reacts. A nose-oriented dog is going to process. Break it down like this. Visual. Trigger, reaction, chase. TRC. Trigger, reaction, chase. A nose dog, nose-driven, scent, puzzle, solve, move forward. Scent, puzzle. Why is that important? When I'm teaching tracking to basic canine handlers, or I'm teaching in my advanced school for the tactical tracking teams, tracking is like connecting the dots. It is like solving a puzzle. And I really like to use that analogy is puzzle, solving a puzzle. So we think about connecting the dots with the odor. So here's some stuff that people really don't want to hear sometimes. You know, the dogs that figured out are usually the ones that make it when the conditions get tough. Cold tracks. Dry ground. I'd really like to think that the guys out west that are dry ground line hunting are looking for this style of dog. You know, the dog that loses and comes back and checks, makes that check and picks it up and moves on. You know, that flashy sight, chase dog. They're the ones that's going to fall apart when things aren't easy, right? The other dogs will come in and pick it up and behind them. So how do we handle that type of dog? If you've got this type of pup, the very first thing is you cannot rush it. Buddy and I also had a conversation about patience and how learning patience and learning how each dog is individually different, which we'll talk about that in a second. Like, patience is a virtue. And sometimes if we can just sit back and let the dogs learn themselves. Did we not talk about this a couple of podcasts ago? Those self-learners, self-discovery. I love it. It is the greatest tool when it comes to training. Just let the dog figure it out. So let the dog develop his confidence in his nose. Don't force the barking. Don't reward chaos. Like, no, I'm getting the more... Well, I've been this way for a while. Once I understood what the difference in, you know, chaos was and actual working prey drive, the chaos, I condemn it. Nope, I don't want it. And that's changed my mind on the style of dog that I actually want. Let that dog trail. Let himself discover. He may not win. He may not figure all of them out, but every time he runs a track, every time he has a race, he's learning something, right? Limit the exposure to sight. Too much visual stimulation. Make them second guess their nose. It creates inconsistency. We talk about canine training is about consistency, consistency. And I also know that when people show their hounds too much game visually, those are the ones that you can have a lot more trouble out of slip training. Because they see that knot on the side of the tree, and then, bam, they slide in there, take up, and you walk into a tree that's got a big knot on the side of it. There's no odor there, but visually, it's because this is what they've learned and this is what they've done. They learned that this is what it looks like, and they're relying on their eyes and not their nose. And you want to hunt those dogs with the right pack early on, right? You hear everybody say, well, I've got a great pup trainer. Well, that may be the style of dog that you should be running with. And I'm not saying you can't run it by itself. I'm not saying that at all. And a lot of this stuff is generic. It's just a baseline. You can go in many different directions, many different styles, many different things that you can do. Okay, so we're just talking about a baseline. So here's when you worry, and here's when to be patient. If the pup shows interest in scent, be patient. If he's trailing consistently, be patient. And if he's moving forward, if he's gaining ground, making progress, even though little steps, I'm not talking about the Kentucky Derby, baby steps, making progress, be patient. But I would be concerned. There's no interest in scent at all. Avoids game completely. And the last one is if there's no progression over time, not one time, two times, it's over time. I tell myself a lot, and it's hard because of our season. Like, I ask myself before I ever make a decision on a dog, did I give the dog a fair shake? Did I do my part? Right? Now, there's a lot of different things that go into that, but did I do my part? That pup you described, he's not a red flag. It's just a different kind of green light for him. Don't worry. When he figures it out, he's going to be in go mode. So at the end of the day, every hound tells you what it is. You just have to listen. Some scream it. Some show it. The worst thing you can do is try to make every dog fit in the same mold. We talk about that buffet. I like to learn everything I can and put it in the buffet. And when I need to pull it out, I just pull one of them things out and put it in my tool bag, right? So that might be the one that you're bragging on two or three seasons from now. When the races get tough and everything else falls apart, that dog's the one that's going to come to shine.
That's going to be a wrap for this week's episode of Creekside Chronicles. We appreciate you spending your time with us. Whether you're in the truck, in the woods, or sitting by the creek just listening along, thank you for walking this trail with us. And we got to say thank you to W Supply for hosting the podcast and supporting everything we do. Be sure to check them out and go to WSupply.com for all your hound hunting needs. Until next time, keep your dogs fed right, those leads tight, boots muddy, and we'll see you at the tree.
Tailgate drops before the light, coolers packed and the rig sitting right, tracking collars charged, beeping green, boots in the bed and the rifles clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum, we're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Ring barking like he knows what's near, nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay, we're burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale, through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog in old WV, North Carolina's pines echo loud with the cry of a hard-run hound. New York forest, Maine's deep snow, Vermont valley's where the black bears go. Truck keeps rolling, wheels don't care, we're chasing daylight, chasing bears. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear, Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun set red in Tennessee, rise through the fog.
and beer. Gas station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise gold in Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care. We're built for the road and chasing bears. Slam the gate, there's a trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to dusk, we're always there, chasing daylight, chasing them bears.